All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. Number one. ויבואו בני ישראל כל העיד במדבר צין בחודש הראשון וישב העם בקודש ותומס שם מרים ותיקבר שם. Parshas Chukas is a parsha of incredible upheaval. Incredible upheaval. I'm sorry. Parshas Chukas. Good. Parshas Chukas is a parsha of... I can't do this for an hour. Right? Parshas Chukas is a... I think it just went off. Parshas Chukas is a parsha of incredible upheaval. In this one parsha, we read about the death of Miriam, the death of Aaron HaKohen, as well as a number of different tumultuous episodes. But the Torah sets the table for what we're about to read with the death of Miriam HaNeviah. As a result of the death of Miriam, actually at least the Gemara understands it as a cause and effect, as a result of the death of Miriam, the Gemara understands that there's no longer a be'er, there's no longer a well. So obviously in the absence of water, it's good to know, in the absence of water, if you're ever in the desert and you don't have water, that is cause to worry. That is cause to worry. And you are within your right to question exactly how you are going to make it through the day. So Am Yisrael gets exceptionally agitated, and they once again lash out. They vaikalu. Whenever you see vaikalu, you know that something's wrong. What does vaikalu mean? Gathered. What is gathered? Gathered what? Right? Mob. Vaikalu means everybody gathering together for one purpose, which could technically be a good thing, but on the other hand, they could also create the mob mentality. Vaikalu Amoshe Aaron. Vayoram Moshe Vayomru Leimor Velu Gavanu Bigva Achinu Lefnei Hashem. And they say to Moshe, "We're going to die. We're going to die just like everyone else has died in the desert." Velama Haveisem Eskal Hashem Ela Midbar Hazel Lamusham Anachnu Bireinu. Why did you bring us out to the desert? You promised us redemption, you promised us Eretz Yisrael, you promised us all of this bracha, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu, you have yet to deliver. Remember, Klal Yisrael, this dar, were the kings of projection. The kings of projection. That everything that happened was always someone else's fault. There was no level of personal responsibility, there was no level of personal culpability. Everything was because of someone else. So Moshe, we're going to die in the desert. You took us out to die. Why did you take us out? There's nowhere to plant. Now, what's interesting about nowhere to plant? Just picking your brain a little bit. First of all, there's no desert. It's in the desert. What else? Bad man. What else? In order to plant, you need seeds. Good. What else do you need? You have to be stationary. You have to be stationary. Right? In order to plant, you can't be a nomadic people. That's the chap of planting. You generally have to stay in the same vicinity of the things that you planted. So it makes no sense over here. They're completely... Why am I bringing this out? Because you could tell sometimes the nature of the arguments that people make tell you where they're really holding. When people say things that are totally nonsensical, you know that there's something else going on. So if they're complaining to Moshe Rabbeinu that we haven't even had a chance to plant... What? You haven't had a chance to plant? Of course you haven't had a chance to plant. We're nomads. Hello, people, right? We've been traveling on 40 years. Of course you have nowhere to... But it just tells you where they're holding. It just tells you, again, we're once again about to experience a fundamental breakdown. Moshe and Aaron run to the Mishkan. Right, it's almost like a scene of fleeing. They run from before the general group to Pesach Homa Vayiplu Apaneim. Now again, contrast this with the Vayipal Moshe Apana from last week, which we spoke about, which Vayipal Moshe Apana Moshe Avinu falls down, which we explained to mean what? An exasperation, like I can't do it anymore. Vayipal Moshe Apanav. Masha'enkin, as opposed to over here, where the Vayipal Moshe Apanav clearly highlights Tfila. Is prayer. That's why they're going to the Mishkan. They're praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayera Kavod Hashem Aleihem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to them. Number two, Vayedaber Shel Moshe Leibar. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, here's the plan. Here's how it's going to go down. Kaches Hamate V'Hakil HaSa'ida. Take your staff, gather the people, Ata V'Aron Achicha, you together with Aaron, V'Dibartem El HaSela, and I want you to speak to the rock, and as a result, but do this Le'inehem. Make sure you speak to the rock, in front of everyone. Everyone should see what's going on. V'nasa ne'mav. And Moshe, I'm telling you that if you speak to the rock, the water is going to flow forth. You will bring forth water from the rock. And not only will you be able to give water to the people, but what else will you able to, will be able to do? You'll be able to water their flocks. Now you have to understand, there are approximately how many Jews in the desert? A lot, right. That's a safe answer, right? A lot. Remember, it's not 600,000, because 600,000 and change is the number of men between the ages of 20 and 60. There are approximately, according to most of the Mefarshim, somewhere between 2.5 and 3.5 million people in the desert. That is a lot of people. That is a lot of people. So Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to bring forth water from the rock, and it's not only going to satisfy the thirst of the people who are there, but you will even be able to water their flocks. Okay. Number three. Vayikach Moshe samatil lefnei Hashem kasher tzivo. Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and take the staff. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the staff. So Moshe and Aaron gather the people in front of the rock that they are supposed to speak to. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, Shimu no hamorim. Shimu no hamorim. You know, Klal Gadol in life, everyone has their breaking point. You could be a Moshe Rabbeinu, but you are going to have that episode that simply throws you over the edge. Just happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shimu na hamorim. Listen, you rebellious nudniks. Listen, you people have made my life a living Gehenna for the last decades. I've done everything for you, and all you have is complaint after complaint after complaint. Listen, you rebellious ones. Because we're going to bring water for you from this rock. Vayare Moshe es yado. Moshe Rabbeinu lifted his hand. Vayach es hasela b'matiu pa'anayim. And he strikes the rock twice. Vayetsu mayim rabim, an incredible gush of water comes forth. Vatesh ta'eda ubiram, and indeed the people and their flocks had a sufficient amount to drink. God's response, number four. Vayomer Hashem Moshe v'al Aaron, ya'an lo he'eman tempi. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and you could imagine, you know, sometimes when you want to deliver rebuke, you have to raise your voice. And sometimes when you want to deliver rebuke, the words themselves are so scathing that you could say it in the most monotone voice, but the recipient of the rebuke feels exactly what you think. So I always imagine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu probably did not raise his voice in this exchange. And he says, Moshe, Ya'an lo ha'amantem bi. Let's translate literally right now. You did, because you did not believe in me, la'hakdishini le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to consecrate or to sanctify me in the eyes of the Jewish people, lochin, therefore, Lo saviu esakal haze elo aris asher nasati lohem. You and your brother Aaron will not bring the people into the land of Israel. Hey, and the Torah ends off now almost like an editorial note. Hey, ma me Meriba, this became known as the place of the waters of contention. Me Meriba, asher rovu bnei Yisrael as Hashem, where the Jewish people contended with God. Vayikadesh bam, and he. Now we'll see what this means. He was sanctified through them. Okay, so let's analyze what's happened over here. So Jewish people come to Moshe Rabbeinu with a request. I'm using request and right in quotations. They came with a request slash complaint. We need water. Moshe Rabbeinu, response? Response? Right? Remember, he doesn't have a response. He doesn't. What do you? Okay, I want water too. You know, like, what do you? Right. Meaning, Moshe. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu has a lot of tricks in his bag. Giving water to 3.5 million people is not one of them. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have a quick answer to this. So therefore, what does he do? He goes to the Mishkan. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Vayipol Moshe. What do you want us to do? Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, take your staff, go speak to the rock, and you will show everybody that you're going to bring water forth from the rock. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the rock, hits the rock twice. Water still comes out. But because Moshe Rabbeinu defied the directive of God, punishment is, you and your brother will not lead the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. Three basic questions on this episode. Question number one is, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu command Moshe Rabbeinu to take the staff if Moshe was never commanded to hit the rock? Right, going back to number two for just a moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu explicitly, Kach es hamata. You'll excuse me. It sounds like Lifnei Iver. Right? It sounds like, please, if you don't want him to go ahead and take the staff, if you don't want him to hit the rock, why are you commanding him to take the staff? If the staff is not part of the miracle, then why is Moshe Rabbeinu commanded to dafka bring the staff to the location of the rock? Second question. I'll take all questions at the end. Second question is, what is the exact nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's sin? HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks in a very broad fashion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yan Loha Emantem Bi. First of all, what does that mean? What does that mean, you didn't believe in me? Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, granted, made a mistake. Does that mean that Moshe Rabbeinu, right, the Av HaNevi'im, doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he has a momentary lapse? So how do we exactly understand the quote-unquote mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu? And question number three is, what is the message for us? What is it exactly that, what is the take-home message of this particular episode? What is it that we are supposed to learn from this incredible, heartbreaking mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu that cost him the one thing that he was looking forward to in life? So, yeah, I'll take quick two questions now. Go ahead. You want to answer?
Yeah.
You want to answer? That's why I'm here. I get to answer. Yeah. If I don't answer your answer, you'll tell me. Yeah. Oh, so wait to see. If I don't say the thing that you're going to say, then good. Then y'all come back to you. Number five, the Ramban. So Ramban begins with an interesting approach. Actually, not his own approach. He quotes the Ramban. He quotes Maimonides. So it's just five aleph. V'harav Rabbi Moshe, sover bo svara. So the Ramban says, the Ramban, Nachmanides, quoting Maimonides, says that the Rambam has the following approach. It's fascinating. The Omar, and this is probably one of the most well-known approaches in this particular story. The Omar, ki Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom, chet ohu, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's sin? Shenota letzad haragzonos. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's sin? Anger. Anger. Moshe's sin is that he got angry, and how did he get angry? With that one phrase, Shimu na Hamorim. Shimu na Hamorim. You know, I read a couple of different essays, biblical critique essays, where they say, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu had an anger management problem. So I'll tell you, my friends, Moshe Rabbeinu got angry one time in his life. If that's an anger management problem, then we're in serious trouble. Moshe Rabbeinu had a lapse. He had a lapse. He got angry. Dikdek alav Hashem Yisbaroch, sheyihye adam kamoa kois lifnei adas b'nei Yisrael, b'mokom she'en ro'oi bo'akas. Now here the Rambam is highlighting two very important ideas. So God is upset with Moshe. Why is God upset with Moshe? Number one, because you're getting angry. But the truth is anger always a bad thing? No. Anger sometimes is a very powerful tool. People who never get angry about anything and kind of adopt a live and let live approach are generally apathetic people. Anger represents passion. You have to know how to channel it in the right way, but there are times when anger is absolutely appropriate. So says the Rambam, the problem over here with Moshe Rabbeinu is A, that he got angry where? In front of the people. As a leader, his job was always to keep it together, even in the most stressful of situations. So number one, you're getting angry in front of the entire Kahal. And number two, b'mokom she'en ro'oi bo'akas, which means what? Right? You know, there are times that the Jewish people complained where the complaint was totally unfounded. Says the Rambam, this is not one of these situations. If the people come to you, because now let's go with the Midrashic approach, that Miriam died, well, that Miriam died, and the Midrashic approach is therefore the well disappears, and the people come to Moshe, where are we getting water from? I mean, my friends, put yourself in this situation. So imagine you're the parent of the young children there in the desert, and you know that you have to sustain, forget about yourself for just a moment, you have to sustain your child. And now the only way you had water to begin with was through this miraculous well. The miraculous well has now, so to speak, dried up. Says the Rambam, it is not outrageous to be a little bit on edge about where your water is going to come from. So the Rambam here is actually defending the response of the Jewish people. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu's anger is unwarranted on two fronts. Number one, you never lose it in front of the klal. That's number one. You want to get angry at home. You want to get angry at private. You want to get angry with God like Moshe Rabbeinu did, right? A couple of parshios ago when he says, Takalish Baruch Hu, right? That I give birth to these people. Are they my children? I have an obligation to that. You can lose it with God. God is very accepting. Not in front of the people, and not when the people are justified in being on edge. V'chol ki yotzei bazeh, b'din ha'isha hu chilul Hashem. Mipnei shemitnu osav kulam umidvarav hayu lemedin v'hayu mikaven lahagia bahem el atzlachas ha'olam hazeh va'olam haba. And now the Rambam takes it a step further. Moshe Rabbeinu was a role model. The people looked to Moshe Rabbeinu not simply as the prophet of God, but they looked to Moshe Rabbeinu as a model human being. What does a tzelem Elohim, what does a person who is made in the image of God looks like? And the answer for this generation was, look at Moshe. Look at Moshe. So Moshe never had the luxury of a behavioral lapse. Moshe Rabbeinu always had to be on because the people were examining his every action and were using him as the model for their own personal life behaviors. So now you put all of this together and says to them, because people see that Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry, that Moshe Rabbeinu loses it, and therefore they will assume what? That this is acceptable behavior. Ve'ech yira alav akas, v'hu min ha'pu'ulos ha'ra'os v'lo tavu, so says the Rambam. The people see that Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry. We know that anger is one of those midos. As an aside, you know, the Rambam writes that in general, in Hilchos Deos, he writes that the general approach to life has to be what? The Derech HaMemutza, the middle path. And that's true with midos as well. With the exception of one midos, says the Rambam, which is Kaas, anger. 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 The Rambam says, well, arrogance is an offshoot. Arrogance is an offshoot of anger. It is. I'm sorry? No. I offshoot. Well, arrogance is an offshoot of anger. What does anger have to do with? Both are exceptionally self-centered midos. Both represent a self-centeredness, an egocentricity. So the Rambam points out that when it comes to kaas, a person, there's no derech hamemutza. There's no middle ground. A person has to try to purge oneself of all kaas. So how does, just as an aside, how does the Rambam suggest you do that? If you have a problem with anger management, what does the Rambam say you should do? Stop getting angry. It's Maimonidean wisdom, which by the way is exceptional wisdom, because what the Rambam is saying is, you want to fix something? Go fix it. Go fix it. You have a problem? Go fix the problem. There's no great chachma, there's no great Torah. You want to change who and what you are, take the reins of life, take the reins of personal existence, and change things around. So the Rambam is saying over here that when you put all of this together, we have a disastrous episode. So now we have Moshe Rabbeinu, let's go a little bit out of order. Moshe Rabbeinu, whom the entire people look to as their behavioral role model, now is getting angry, saying that it should be avoided at all costs. And even if there are times that it's appropriate in private, it's never appropriate in public in front of the kal, in front of the klal. Couple that with the fact that it's not even warranted over here because the people deserve. The people were entitled to be on edge because of the lack of water. He said, the Rambam writes, V'hine yitanu safek mistake at Torah, shenem rubo dvarim rabim v'nishal pamim rabim, eize chit chota ure'ei mashinar. So the Rambam is very happy with his own answer. At the end, this the Rambam says, and I think this answer clears up all ambiguity. No need to talk anymore. Everybody wonders about what the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu. I've been explicitly clear. We've answered the question. So look at the Ramban's response to the Rambam in 5 days. V'hosif hevel al havolim. So the Ramban apparently didn't believe in sugarcoating, right? So what does the Ramban say? The Rambam is heaping nothingness upon nothingness. Or in other words, nicely said, I think I may disagree with the Rambam's approach, right? So the Ramban is vehemently opposed to this approach of the Rambam, which we'll see in just a little bit. Sha'kosav amar merisem pi sha'avru al dvaro va'amar lohe emantem bi sha'lohe eminu bo ein ha'onesh bavur shekas. So the Ramban says, Rambam, there's one reason why I think you're fundamentally wrong, because the text doesn't support you. Because what does the text say? God himself comes to Moshe. What does he say to Moshe? You're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Why? Why? You didn't believe in me. Says the Ramban, if the sin or if the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu was ka'as, then what? Why didn't God say that? God could have just said, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm sorry, but you got angry in front of the cow. You lost your temper in front of the cow. They didn't deserve that way you lashed out at them, and therefore you're no longer the leader. The Shbaruch Hu doesn't say anything about ka'as. It's all about the fact you didn't believe in me, and you failed to sanctify me. This leads the Ramban to his own approach in number 6, which is our second approach. Again, this is all just addressing the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's sin, which was question number 2. So, number 6, approach number 2, the Ramban writes, V'akarov min advarm shenem rubazeh. So the Ramban says, I think the closest answer to this is the following. V'hu tov litchos ha-shoal, heim divrei Rabbeinu Chananel, shekosav ki achetu omron, hu omron, hamin hasela hazeh no tzilachem mayim. So the Ramban coined Rabbeinu Chananel says, what was the sin? The sin was the way they phrased the miracle. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron come before the people, what do they say? They say, we are going to extract water from the rock. So what should they have said? The problem, says the Ramban, is that Moshe and Aaron, again, the Ramban will say, Ramban, the first one to say, it's totally unintentional. Moshe and Aaron are not trying to hog the glory for themselves, but the way they conveyed the process to the Jewish people was to make it sound like they are going to perform this incredible miracle. They took the credit away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kiderech she'amru, b'seis Hashem lochem b'er basar le'achol. Meaning, and the Ramban contrasts this with previous miracles where Moshe Rabbeinu explicitly says, God is going to do this for you. V'chein b'chol anisim, yodim ki Hashem ya'aseim amlafli. That it was Moshe Rabbeinu, again, in every other situation, Moshe Rabbeinu was always explicit in saying, this is not me, it's always HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ba'ulai chashvu ha'am, ki Moshe ve'aron b'chachmasam, hotzi lohem mayim min ha'sela, v'zehu lo kidashtem osi. So the Ramban says, because maybe the people thought that, hey, maybe Moshe and Aaron know some trick, or they know some kind of deeper geological science, which allows them to know where there's a water source, and therefore they pick the right rock, they pick the right rock, they patched it hard enough, and sure enough, this water comes gushing out. And says the Ramban, now the wording makes a little bit more sense, because God says to them, lo kidashtem osi, you did not sanctify me. In essence, what did you do? You sanctify yourselves. You made yourselves look like the providers of the salvation, but you took the salvation away from me. Look at letter Beis, 6 Beis. Umaaseh harishon b'tzur, amar hinini omei lefanecha, shama latzor b'choriv, v'shivim hazkenim ro'im amud ha'anon, omei dalatzor, v'hinim sparsim ki maaseh Hashem ha'gadolhu. See, here's what's interesting. The Ramban contrasts it. Remember, there are 2 biblical rock episodes. In the first rock episode, so what happened? There Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to hit the rock. What the Ramban points out, however, in that first rock episode, there was an intense manifestation of the divine. The Shekhinah was clearly palpable and present at that moment. Therefore, there was no fear that what? That the people would come to assume that it was Moshe and Aaron who performed this miracle, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Aval Bikan Lo ra'u davar, but here God was not tangibly present. Uvitahu b'ma'amar Moshe v'Aaron. This is the Ramban. Therefore, the people could be very easily led astray by the word choice of Moshe and Aaron. V'itochin sh'amar bazem ma'altamis. Look at this Ramban. So Ramban says, now we can understand the text. Because what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Again, this is going back to number 4. Ya'en lo ha'amantembi. Excuse me, this is not here. This is in Dvarim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and chazers over with Moshe, or Moshe Rabbeinu goes over with Klai Yisrael, all of the events of the desert. So there it uses Lashon Ma'altem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now Ma'altem means what? Ma'altem. What's Mi'ila? Inappropriate use of consecrated property. Right, that's Mi'ila. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol says to Moshe, Ma'altem bi. You used me. You trespassed inappropriately. You took something that was mine and you made it into your own. You took my power of the ability to bring forth water from the rock, and you made it look like to the people that you did it yourself. Again, God is not accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of doing this intentionally, but this was the byproduct of his actions. So watch this. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you are ma'altem, merisem, you went against me, you rebelled against me, I told you to speak to the rock. Why? Because if Moshe would have spoken to the rock, what would that have clearly shown? That it was Kadosh Baruch Hu who was orchestrating all of these events. The problem now is with the show of brute force, one could erroneously come to assume that it was Moshe and Aaron who brought about this miracle. And that's it. Look what the Ramban does. Because remember, this was a troubling phrase in number 4. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says that you didn't believe in me. You didn't believe in me. Ya'an lohe emantem bi lahakdisheni le'ene'am. So the way we read Ya'an lohe emantem means that you, Moshe and Aaron, did not believe in me. So the Ramban says, that's difficult to say. Because it's about Moshe and Aaron. So could it be that Moshe and Aaron didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So look what he says. Vihi, last 2 lines of 6 bays. Vihi lohe emantem. Yotze el bnei Yisrael. The Ya'an Aloha Amantan that you did not believe is not a reference to Moshe and Aaron. Who is it a reference to? To the Jewish people. What does that mean? That what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Moshe is, you lost an opportunity. There was an opportunity here to bolster the belief that the people have in me. There was an opportunity here to position me as the God of salvation. Remember, if the Jewish people's conception about God at this point in time is not all that much about the God of salvation, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu does provide them with food, with water, with shelter day in and day out, at the end of the day, the general conception of God in this generation is that of a vengeful God, is that of a punishing God. That's their frame of reference, that's their context. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, you missed the golden opportunity. I could have been the one who gave them water. I could have been the one who gave them life. I could have been the one who, on one hand, could have decided to let them die out over here, but made an active, conscious decision to sustain them and to allow them to live. And what that would have done is restored in their eyes the notion of the God of salvation. But Ya'an Loha Emantan, you took away the opportunity for me to bolster the emunah of the Jewish people. Moshe and Aaron, I know you guys believe in me, but you committed ni'ilah. You took my nes, and unintentionally, you made it your own. And by doing so, that by itself is not the problem. The problem is you deprived the people of an opportunity for spiritual connection and spiritual growth. And that is unforgivable. The entire avoda, the entire mandate of a leader, is to give his people opportunities for spiritual connection, nourishment, and growth. Moshe, here you did just the opposite. Not only did you not give them the opportunity, but what did you do? You deprived them of the opportunity. Again, albeit unintentionally, but nevertheless, that's the reality. So we have two fundamentally different approaches from the Ramban and the Rambam, or from the Ramban and the Ramban. The Rambam goes with the Ka'as motif. Ka'as motif, but again, the Rambam, I think, often gets shortchanged because people say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. No. Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, yes, but it's not just the anger. Like everything else in life, it's the context. It's the fact that he got angry when the people were right in getting a little bit on edge about the lack of water. It was the fact that he got angry when you're never supposed to do that in public in front of the cow. It was the fact that he got angry and everybody, he was the behavioral role model. When people looked how to behave, and remember, understand, you want to talk about a Baal Midos. What did the people see in it? There's one thing that you have to say about Moshe Rabbeinu, it's what? Humble, that's true. He's kept it together. Right? He's kept it together. He's really kept it together. And these people have certainly tried his patience time after time after time. He had to do that because he was the model of human behavior. So that's the Rambam saying. He had this lapse. Again, he's a human being. He had the breaking point. He had this lapse. But for the leader, for the manik, it's an unforgivable lapse. And therefore, there are irreversible consequences. Ramban, no, it's not about the laughs. It's about the me'ilah. It's about the fact that this was an opportunity for spiritual connection. This was an opportunity to rehabilitate the bond. That the people see me as the punishing God. Now they're going to see me as the nourishing God. And Moshe, when you took that miracle for yourself, you deprived me, God, of the opportunity to reconnect. And you deprived them of the opportunity to reconnect. So this helps us this helps us understand, at least in certain measure, of the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. But it doesn't help us with questions 1 and 3, which is the matah. The matah is still exceptionally troubling. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you don't want Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and use the matah, then why are you telling him to take it? Although we could say the following. Interestingly enough, according to the Ramban, we can understand the need for the staff. The staff represents what on a basic level? Authority, very true. What else? I'm sorry? Connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the matah has been an instrument of miracles. But what is it? Just forget about what you know about the matah. When you a weapon. It represents strength. It represents human strength. That's what a stick is. A stick, right? A stick could be used for a lot of different things. A stick could be used to steady myself, right? So that I'm firmly standing on the ground. A stick could be used as a weapon. But the point is, it's a symbol of human strength. So it could be that according to the Ramban, what's unfolding over here is the following. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu? I want you to take the staff with you. I want you to take the matah, which on a certain level represents human strength. And what do I want you to do with it? Absolutely nothing. Why? Because I want you to create the contrast. Because by Moshe Rabbeinu having the staff there, right? That's the same staff that was used to punish power repeatedly. By having the same staff there, and yet having it idle, reinforces the fact that what? That all of this was coming from God. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, bring the matah for the sake of affecting the contrast. The problem, of course, becomes now that when Moshe Rabbeinu goes ahead and uses the matah, the entire contrast is undone, and hence we come into the Me'ilah. But let's focus for a couple of moments on approach number 3. So at least now we have 2 insights into Moshe Rabbeinu's behavior, the Ramban's insights giving us an answer as to why Moshe Rabbeinu was obligated to bring the staff. Numbers 7, 8, and 9 highlight, every once in a while you come across something that's not just a good pshat or a good approach in a pasuk or in its particular narrative, but it's literally transformative. You will not look at life. So I guess I should give you the disclaimer. If you want to continue looking at life the same way, you should leave now. Right? If you want a totally different perspective and mamish a new way to view everything about our existence, hold on tight. So look at the Ma'aral, number 8. Yeah. Let's leave out Miriam for now. Just because Miriam brings her own dynamic into the story, which I think we have our hands full with Moshe and Aaron. All right, so we'll loop back to Miriam a little bit at the end, but even though they're connected in that the Be'er, the well, was because of her, the water was because of her, and therefore the crisis is caused by her death, it's difficult to link the stories.
No, it's the fact that it's inconceivable that she could give the water.
So that's a general discussion about the fact that miracles generally don't work. Miracles are like fireworks, right? What happens when they're going off? Oh, it's in Yom HaYoma, right? This weekend, right? What happens when the fireworks go off? And what happens 10 seconds later? Okay, and if somebody asks you about how were the fireworks yesterday? Oh, good. And a week later they ask you, how were the fireworks? What fireworks? Right? Miracles are like fireworks. They're wonderful when they're happening and they goo-ah, but they very quickly wear off. That happens to be the fundamental problem of this generation in general. Okay, look at the Ma'aral, number 8. No, excuse me, number 7. I'm sorry, number 7. So the Ma'aral, now let me just give you one word of introduction with this. So the Ma'aral, just so you understand his style, the Ma'aral is repetitive. The Ma'aral often says the same things over and over and over. Now, the truth is, not because there's a deeper meaning in the second time around or the third time around, that was just his literary style. It happens to be helpful because by the time you finish reading a piece of Ma'aral, you know the concept because you've read it a number of different times. But that's just, so if it sounds repetitive, it's not that you're missing something. That's his literary style. So look at number 7. Says the Ma'aral, Omnom, 7a, Ka'asher teida ha'emes, So the first thing the Ma'aral does, his premise is that there's one sin here. There's one sin, with two parts. The one sin, well, we don't know what the one sin is yet. We know what the two parts are. The two parts is Moshe Rabbeinu lashing out at the people, telling them, listen, you rebellious ones. Right? So that's part one of the sin. And part two of the same sin is striking of the rock. But they're not too independent. And by the way, this actually fits in very beautifully with the Rambam as well. This, the Rambam's idea that it's kas. So the anger takes two forms. The anger takes the form of lashing out at the people, and the anger takes the form of striking the rock. So the Maral goes with the same general premise, that it's two sins, part of one bigger sin. So here's what's interesting. The second time you've seen this in the Mefarshim, the Rambam said the same thing. Everybody struggles with this. Now you have to understand, as I always tell you, whenever we learn Chumash, right? So if you really want to appreciate what's happening, what do you have to do? Right? Pretend like you've never seen the story before. Right? So imagine you're learning this for the first time. You don't know how it's going to end. And you get to the punchline where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. So as the reader, what is your response to that? Zelo fair. Right? What? A whole life of sacrifice? A whole life of giving? And because of one mistake, that's it? So that's why everybody is perplexed by it. See, we're not as perplexed by it because the truth is we know the story. And when you know the punchline, it's difficult to look at it objectively. But if you take a step back, it's exceptionally troubling. Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, not that I'm Moshe Rabbeinu's defense attorney, but I feel from Moshe Rabbeinu gave up everything in life. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his marriage. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his children. What do you ever hear about Moshe Rabbeinu's children? Right? What did they do in life? Right? And the answer is, not all that much. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was busy raising everyone else's children, and so his own children took a back seat. Moshe Rabbeinu was helping everybody else reconcile their shalom bayis problems, and so his marriage essentially disintegrated. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up everything. And because of one mistake, yes, it's a bad mistake, but he should lose the one thing that he was looking forward to his entire leadership career. So that's the Rambam said the same thing. So now the Maharal says it. Everybody's troubled with this. Everybody's entangled in this. We don't know what to do with this. Look what he says. So the Maharal says something very strange. He says, and no one knows what? No one knows what. What the right answer is. See, there's a lot of conjecture, says the Maharal. There's a lot of speculation. But at the end of the day, what did he do? We don't really know. Look what the Maharal says. Yesh lefarish chitza. But I'm going to tell you an answer. This is quite profound. He says, Do, ki achiv shalosh ve'aron, ki dechsiv v'kra, ya'an asher lo ha'eman tabilak tishen. So the Maharal says, well, look at the pasuk. What is God's response? So the Maharal works a little bit backwards. We can understand the nature of the sin by the way that what? By the way that God responds. What does God say? Because God's going to tell them what they did wrong. So we can reconstruct the crime working backwards. When we know that what they did wrong, when we know from God's perspective what they did wrong, we can begin to understand the act. What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say to them? Because you did not believe in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the people. So by hitting the rock, instead of speaking to the rock, by getting angry, Shimon HaMorim, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron demonstrated that they lacked belief in God and therefore failed to sanctify God in the eyes of the people. Okay, so what does that mean? V'dover zeh, mashehiku pa'amayim el haselik, asher nasa lemanes. Look at letter B. Kizehu yitzia min ha'emuna. So the Maharal suggests, and this is going to sound very simple at first, but you'll see how complex it's going to become. The Maharal suggests that the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron by hitting the rock, by yelling at the people, is Yitzia min ha'emuna. Literally translated, what does that mean? They left their faith behind. Yitzia min ha'emuna, right? Yitzia means I walk out of something, which means I'm here, and the item that I left is not here with me. The item that I left is behind me. So Yitzia min ha'emuna means that Moshe and Aaron temporarily left their belief in God. Okay. Ki asu ma'ase zeh derech kas, because what they did from anger. Umi she'osa mitzas Hashem derech kas, bifrat ka'asher na'ase lohem neis kaze, and whenever someone executes the command of God in a state of anger, specifically when the events are so cloaked in miraculous activity, kimo she'asehem sham rishun amorim v'chein kishihiko la'asela ein zeh emuna. When you do something in a state of anger, That is not emuna. That is not faith. Okay, we still don't understand what this means yet. Let us see. Ki ha emuna. So again, the Maharal is going to state this once more in a different way. Ki ha emuna, hu mi shebotech bo yisparach. Because what is emuna? What is emuna? What is faith? Faith is someone who truly believes in God. Ein lo bo rak simcha. And if you always, if you truly believe in God, then you only have what?
Simcha.
Now, what does simcha mean? No. What does simcha mean? Simcha can't mean happiness. Right? Why can't simcha mean happiness? Because no one is in a perpetual state of, I mean, I guess if you're on some good medication. Yeah, but most people are not in a natural state of sustained happiness. Simcha does not mean happiness. Remember, simcha means, I'm sorry, a sense of contentment, or we'll use a different word, serenity. Equilibrium. So simcha means a state of spiritual, emotional serenity, equilibrium, contentment. I may not be in a good mood. I may not be actively happy. Life may be exceptionally difficult, but I'm able to maintain a life equilibrium. You'll see why this is exceptionally important. So says the Maharal, and this is his thesis. What is emuna? Let's get a definition. Emuna is belief in God. And if you truly believe in God, you are always in a state of what? Serenity, contentment, simcha. Shezeh inyan emuna. Because this is emuna. Shema'amin bo obodech bo. Because what is emuna? Again, we're going a little bit in circles. Because what is emuna? When you believe in God. V'im ha'bitachon ha'simcha. And if you have emuna, which means belief in God, then by definition, what else do you have? Simcha. Then you have contentment. Avalim ha'kas in kan emuna. But if there's anger, then by definition, what do you lack? Emuna. Right? Umashehiku pa'amayim, and the fact that they struck the rock twice, yore ze al miyota emuna bitachon bo. They struck the rock out of a state of kaas. If you have kaas, then by definition you don't have simcha. If you don't have simcha, then by definition you don't have what? You don't have emuna. V'davar ze yadua, and says the Maharal, this is known. Things like this are known to the Maharal, right? Whenever you see somebody say, oh, it's Yadua, it's understood. Sure, it's understood to you if you're the Maharal. Ki mi she'eno ma'amin u'boteach bo yisparach bebitachon gomer hu bekas u'machos. That someone who does not fully believe in God and put his total trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu lives life in a state of anger and upheaval. Okay, look at number 8. We're going to read all of these sections of the Maharal, then we're going to put it together. 8a. I put more on here, the footnotes of the Maharal, because I used the Rav Hartman edition of the Maharal. So you can look at the footnotes. They shed a little bit more light on what we're reading up here, but we're not going to do it for the shir. So 8a, says the Maharal, Uba'asher Amar Hashem Yisparach al Moshe lahotzi ma'ay min atzor. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and bring water forth from the rock, Hayo lahem la'asos bo, Hayo lahem la'asos be'emuna bo yisparach. How were they supposed to bring water forth from the rock in a state of what? In a state of emuna. State of emuna. Okay, let's play this out. Shahari Hashem Yisparach Oseneis Kazalisol Otsim Aminasal. Because remember, God tells them, remember as we pointed out last week, that with the exception of the Korach Rebellion and maybe one or two other episodes, Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership is very scripted. God tells him what is going to happen, when it's going to happen. So God says, go to the rock, take your staff, speak to the rock, water is going to come out. So Moshe, you know that a tremendous nace is going to occur. Va'az, hayu ro'im habitachon bo yisparach, mashehu ose iman evroim. And the people would have seen, again, the incredible miraculous activity that God does with his creations. Va'haya l'moshe u'la'aron, lehischadish be'emuna u'bitachon yisera. Moshe and Aaron should have girded themselves, should have rejuvenated, renewed themselves with a new purposeful sense of emuna, of belief, and bitachon and trust. Va'az hayu osim b'simcha, emaneis hagadosha osa Hashem, shahayu ro'i lechadish emuna. Okay, fine. One last section of the Maharal, we're going to put it all together. Number 9. V'hine shnei advarim. So therefore, remember, the Maharal groups the two events together. The lashing out of Shimon HaMorim, listen, you rebellious ones, together with the striking of the rock, is one, two pieces of the same sin. V'hine shnei advarim. Ha'echad ma sha'amar Shimon HaMorim, u'ma shehikul b'tzor pa'amayim. So that which Moshe Rabbeinu lashed out and said, listen, you rebellious ones, and that which he hit the rock twice, ha'kol hefech ha'emuna. All of that is the fundamental opposite of belief. V'lochein tintza pa'amim omrim, razal, shachit ma shehika tzor pa'amayim, u'pa'amim omrim shachit ma sha'amar Shimon HaMorim. V'hakol in your echa. That's why it says the Maral, the fact that you'll see some of our Shem say that the sin was the lashing out, and others say the sin is the striking of the rock. It's one and the same. V'hakol in echa. Shevishu'a she'asa Hashem Yisparach Neis Lahem, Hayo Lahem Lahosif Emuna Ubitachon, Vim Ha'emuna Ubitachon in Kan Ka'as. So what is the Maral saying? The Maral is advancing an incredible Yisod. When you have true faith in God, the greatest manifestation of that faith is that true bitachon has a calming and soothing effect on the believer. Let's analyze this. Bitachon, belief in God, means what? On its most basic level, what does it mean? Okay. God in total control. Good. What does it mean? What else? Right? Let me reformulate that just a little bit. Basic bitachon comes down to one phrase, one belief. I believe that God has my back. That's emuna. That's bitachon. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to leave me hanging. Now, that doesn't mean that life is going to be easy. That doesn't mean everything's going to fall into place the way I want it to be. But fundamental bitachon means that I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has my back. That no matter what happens in life, I'm not going at it alone. No matter how turbulent life becomes, God has not left me to the winds of chance or of fate. But that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is organizing the world around me. And God is helping me to organize myself to somehow tap into my destiny. That's bitachon. Bitachon means the belief that God has your back. If you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has your back, then how do you react to stressful situations? With absolute calm. Because the only reason we lose control in stressful situations is why? Because we feel that our lives are spinning out of control. Because when I encounter stress, I see stress as a lack of control. Oh my gosh. The plan is not coming through to fruition as I thought. I don't have control. Where are things going to end up? But if you have bitachon, if you have belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then even when it appears that things are spiraling out of control, and they may actually be spiraling out of control, I know that God has my back. And that knowledge inspires within me a real sense of serenity. A real, doesn't mean that I'm going to be happy, and that's what the Maral says. No, it doesn't mean I'm going to be happy, because life still may be spiraling out of control, but I know, that somehow it's going to work out. I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here and he's going to help me get control of the situation. That's the Maral is saying. The Maral is saying over here that yes, Moshe and Aaron, you confronted an exceptionally stressful situation. An exceptionally stressful situation. The people come by Akilu. They don't come like a couple of people. They come. There's a mob mentality. And they are coming to manage sack you. They're coming to go ahead and give you another wallop upside the head, and they're going to remind you how you failed, and they're going to remind you that you took the math teacher, and they're going to load all of this stuff on you. And Moshe and Aaron, here is your moment to show the people what emuna actually means. Emuna is the ability to remain calm under stressful situations. Not because of cognitive dissonance, not because you're living in some alternate universe, because you believe that you are not in this alone. Because you believe, again, and I'm saying it over and over, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has your back. And that's the Maral is saying. That when you have bitachon, that yields simcha. Not simcha, big smile on your face, you're doing cartwheels because everything is hunky-dory, right? But simcha serenity, simcha contentment, simcha life equilibrium, that I know I don't have to go at this alone. And therefore says the Maral, that Moshe Rabbeinu, that was the fundamental failing. That ultimately Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to show the people that one who possesses true emuna, true belief, true bitachon in God, has the ability to transcend his immediate circumstances and need not get caught up in all of the stress of the immediate moment. Do you have to deal with the stress? Of course. Do you have to work through the stress? Yes. Do you have to lose it because of the stress? Absolutely not. Because the only time you lose it because of the stress is when you feel forsaken, when you feel alone. And true emuna, true bitachon, reminds the person in the stressful situation that God has my back. So now we understand that this was the missed opportunity of Moshe Rabbeinu. And now we can put this all together according to the Ma'aral. So again, the Ma'aral very much, almost a little bit like the Ramban. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu command Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and take the staff, according to the Ma'aral? The idea over here is, again, to create the contrast. But the idea is that staff, like the Ramban, creates force. But what is Moshe Rabbeinu going to show the people? When you have bitachon, you don't need what? You don't need force. You don't need, obviously there are times when you need force, but at least in this circumstance. Here, you don't need force. When you have true bitachon, when you have true emunah that God has your back, put your faith in God and don't worry about the force. So like the Ramban, the staff is there to create a, it's here because I want to show you what I can do. But I'm also going to show you what? What I'm not going to do. The fact that the staff is, remember, every other time that people have seen the staff, what's happened? Right, let's go back. Right, every time we've seen the staff, right, Paro was punished, the sea split, right, there's always, but yet, the people are going to, the staff is going to sit there, firmly embedded in the staff, representing force, representing strength, but that's not the Musar over here, that's not the lesson. The lesson over here is that when you have bitachon, when you have faith, when you have emunah, that inspires the individual not force, but tranquility. And it is that life tranquility that will get you through the day. And now we also understand the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Ma'aral. Moshe Rabbeinu had an opportunity to teach them. And in the best way to teach, of course, is how? Is how? By example. He had the opportunity to show that when you have bitachon, when you have emunah, you have simcha, and that simcha engenders tranquility, and that tranquility allows you to transcend even the most stressful of situations and keep it together no matter how difficult life becomes. And ultimately, the take-home message, according to the Ma'aral, is an incredible take-home message. Take-home message is quite simple. There is tranquility in faith. There is incredible tranquility in faith. You know, the problem is, the reason why we suddenly have difficulty appreciating this, is because many of us wait to build our emunah until when? When we encounter stress. I want to tell you, Klal Gadol, it's very difficult to find God when you're stressed. Because when you're stressed, usually a lot of emotional energy goes into managing your stress itself. It's very difficult to free up any other emotional and spiritual energy for any kind of theological or spiritual pursuits. And the problem is, if you try to look for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the midst of stress, it's hard to find that simcha. What the Ma'aral is saying over here is such a profound yesod, that you want tranquility, and by the way, everybody wants tranquility, right? Who doesn't want the tranquility? Don't you just want to wake up in the morning, right? Take a deep breath, say moda'ani, look at the sun and say, it is so good to be alive. I can't wait for the day. I can't. Right? Many of us wake up in the morning and we say to ourselves, oh boy, I know what I have to do this day. And it's really difficult and it's really stressful and it's exceptionally overwhelming. Now that stuff doesn't go away, but the way we manage it could fundamentally change. A person who is strongly anchored and rooted in a real fundamental emunah is able to engender within him or herself this profound sense of simcha, again, not simcha like that, but like real, like equilibrium simcha, and that's able to keep a handle even on the most stressful situations of life. I just want to show you one thing, just an interesting follow-up with this. If you take a look at number 10, I think I actually quoted this kapitel of Tehillim, I'm not sure when. I think it was in the last couple of shiurim. But look at this. David HaMelech says, and we're not going to go through the whole kapitel. This is the one about Avshalom. Right? With David HaMelech, I think maybe we spoke about it last week. Mizmor David Bevarcho Mipnei Avshalom Melo. So we spoke about why is David HaMelech singing if he's in the midst of running away from Avshalom. But I don't want to focus on that. Look at the underlying line in number 10. Such a profound statement. Ani shachavti v'ashina. What is that? Now remember, context is everything. What is David HaMelech writing about over here in the middle, in this capital? One word. Turbulence. Right? Turbulence. Turmoil. Right? David HaMelech is fleeing because his own flesh and blood has revolted against him, seized the throne, seized the capital city. David HaMelech is on the run. And what does David HaMelech say in the midst of all of this? Aniach shachafti va'ashin. If there's one thing most of us can't do when you're in the midst of exceptionally difficult times, it's what? Sleep. Sleep. And what does David HaMelech say? Ani shachafti. Shachafti means I lay down. Now, okay, you lay down. Many times we lay down, but it doesn't mean that's what? You fall asleep. I lay down. Okay, I was tossing and turning. No. Ani shachafti v'ashina. David HaMelech says, you know what? Despite all this, I put my head on the pillow and I slept like a baby. Slept like a baby. I lay down, I fell asleep. Hakizosi! And guess what? I got up the next morning. Why? Ki Hashem Yismechini. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is supporting me. So what's the pshat? So first, I just want to point something very interesting out over here. Look at 11 and 12. There's a fundamental machlokes as to how to understand David HaMelech's sleep. We actually spoke about this in our witch shir, in our Tehillim series. There are different types of biblical sleep, right? There's sleep. People sometimes go to sleep. Why? Right? To escape. They're done. I can't do it anymore. What's the greatest example of that? Yonah. Excellent. Right? Yonah goes below deck, and he goes because Yonah wants to die. Yonah's totally done. And that, so Rashi says in number 11, Ani shechavti v'ashina, li bi'otum bidago pachat. My heart is closed up because of fear and worry. So according to Rashi, why is David HaMelech going to sleep? Escape. I'm paralyzed. Even King David gets paralyzed. Life has become too overwhelming. David HaMelech is shutting down. I'm going to my room. I'm closing the door. I'm getting into bed, pulling the covers over my head, and leave me alone. I'll come out when I'm ready, but I can't handle life. Radak says, what are you talking about? Number 12. Ani shachavti v'ashina, shachavti bebetach. I went to sleep. Why? Why? Because I was confident. Ve'ishan b'shalom. And not only did I lay down, I fell asleep. Why? Total peace, total tranquility. Ki adam she'ein lo pachad. Like a man who doesn't have a care in the world. Radak goes on to number 13. Ani shachavti v'ashina, shachavti v'betach v'ishan b'shalom ki adam she'ein lo pachad. Akitzosi ve'ein nivho. And furthermore, I got up. And how did I get up? How did I get up? Right? Right, slowly, quietly, right, I took my time, I didn't, not with the start, not just the start, the inner, I wasn't petrified. You know, when a person goes to sleep and you're stressed, you have difficulty falling asleep, and often you wake up with a start as well. Because often a person is stressed. So what happens? We know that our dreams are a manifestation of our subconscious. So if a person is stressed, if a person is fearful about their circumstances, chances are they'll have some unsettling dreams as well. Well, if you have unsettling dreams, you just don't have a restful sleep, and you get up with a start. The other man says, "That's not me." He says, "I'm sorry." So the other man says, "You'll ask. You're going to ask. You're going to ask. You're going to ask." How could David HaMelech lay down, fall asleep, sleep well, get up in such a leisurely fashion when he has all of these troubles unfolding all around him? V'lama ani boteach kol kach, last line, number 13, ki Hashem yismechin. Because God will support me. Ki kein re'isi b'chalom. Now whether or not that literally means that David's saying he had a prophetic vision, or that David just has a sense of intuition. What David HaMelech is saying is such a profound pasuk. Yes, my world is crumbling around me, David HaMelech. He's not escaping that. Mizvah bevarchu bnei Avshalom b'no. And remember, the first part of the capital is Hashem marabut sarai. David HaMelech is not living in a dream world. He has difficulties. He has challenges. And the truth is, he doesn't know how the story's going to end. He doesn't know how it's going to turn out. We know everybody lived happily ever after, except Avshalom. But right, David HaMelech lived happily ever after. It worked out okay. David doesn't know that. But yet, ashachavti, ashina, hakitosi, ki Hashem yismechini. God has my back. And when God has my back, that's not a guarantee that things are going to work out the way that I wanted them to. It's not even a guarantee that everything is going to be quote-unquote okay. It's not a guarantee that I'm going to be happy. But it's a guarantee that things always work out somehow the way they are supposed to. Hakitzosi, I get up, face the new day without a start, without a pachad. Why? Ki Hashem yismechini. Because I know that God has my back. It's that same Maharal type idea. That true bitachon, true emuna, engenders a simcha, engenders a tranquility, and it's that tranquility that allows us to face even the most indomitable circumstances. David HaMelech says, with this we'll conclude, David HaMelech says this elsewhere, number 14, he says, Va'ani b'chastecha batachti, Yageli bibishua secha. David HaMelech says, I trust in your chesed. I trust in your chesed. I mean, I trust that everything is going to be okay. Yageli b'Yeshua Secha, my heart will rejoice in your salvation. Ashir l'Hashem ki amad. So look what's interesting about this. If you look at number 15, so Rabbi Lev Yitzchak of Berditchev writes the following. He says, Zemash she'amar David HaMelech lifnei Hashem. So what was David HaMelech saying in this one simple phrase? V'ani v'chastecha batachti yageli b'Yeshua Secha. What's the pshat? Listen to this. So David HaMelech says like this, Ki kol ha'olam, smeichim rak la'achar she'Hashem ona lahem. In general, when are people happy? When do they rejoice? When things work out. Right? When things fall into place, I am a happy camper. Right? When things go the way that I want, mamash I'm filled with simcha. Aval anachnu, writes Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, but we, Am Yisrael, b'nei Avram, Yitzchak, v'Yakov, v'arbo imos ha'kidoshos, etzlinu zeh kol kach shoneh. The Jewish people operate on a different level. Anachnu yodim, bituchim, umargishim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yazor lano. Even before everything works out, we always know that what? That yiyeh tov, that it will work out. The koach of Am Yisrael is the ability to always harbor an unshakable sense of optimism. We know that God has our back. It doesn't mean we're not going to get hurt. It doesn't mean we're not going to shed tears. It doesn't mean we're not going to cry. It doesn't mean life's going to be easy. But I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has my back, so somehow everything's going to work out. Anachnu yodim bevados shehaKadosh Baruch Hu makshil tefilasinu. So look how he interprets this phrase. This is amazing. V'ani bechastecha batachti. So what does David HaMelech say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I trust in your chesed. Ani boteach becha ribono shel olam. V'ani odea shetestachli. V'ani odea shetazor li letakin hakol. V'ani odea shetiti neshon hatova. Okay, look at the last line. V'lachin, afilu lifnei shetazor li betoshio, yogeli li b'shua secha. Listen to the interpretation of this verse. Rabbi Yitzchak and David HaMelech saying the following idea. I am sure that you are going to take care of me. And so sure, Yagel libi b'shua secha. Yagel libi b'shua secha means what? I will rejoice in your salvation. And when will I rejoice in your salvation? When? Even before it actually comes to fruition. I am so sure that you have my back. I am so sure that you are going to take care of me that I am proactively, or maybe even prematurely, celebrating salvation even before it has actually begun to sprout. And now we emerge from this particular episode with an incredible, incredible yesod. We learn from this episode of Moshe Rabbeinu, the terrible lapse of Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, for Moshe Rabbeinu is a terrible lapse. The one lapse which had such high stakes. So we learned so many different lessons. We learned the destructive power of anger. Destructive power of anger. And we know that although halacha lemaisa, anger might be warranted sometimes, a person always has to do a self-check. Is this a situation in which it is appropriate to become angry or not? We learned from this episode that we have to always be careful to give God the credit that is due to Him, and never take credit for things that are truly the domain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are certain things which we deserve credit for, and certain things for which the covet belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Always make sure to give God His, and God will give you yours. And we emerge with a fundamental life lesson, that emunah, bitachon, is the most important thing that we could have in our life arsenal. Because as the Maharal says, the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu is you had a chance to teach the people that when you have belief in God, when you believe that God has your back, you have serenity, you have tranquility, you have quietude, you have equilibrium, and that will allow you to face every challenge that life throws your way, even keeled, so solidly planted on the ground, and with the head clearly on your shoulders. Moshe Rabbeinu, when you got angry at them, hitting the rock, lashing out at them, they lost the opportunity to learn how to be a ma'amin. But from Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake, we learn ultimately an incredible life lesson. We can't wait until the stressful situations in life arise to cultivate a relationship with God, because often by then it's exceptionally difficult. The goal is to be proactive in building our emunah, because one who builds up a solid relationship with God, when faced with the difficult situations of life, which we all are, we all have been, and we all will be, that emunah will help engender a sense of ahava, that ahava will help engender a sense of tranquility, of quietude, of even-keeledness, And that will help us meet all of our life's challenges. Yes?
It's not anguish, it's